hear me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to begin not talking about health and nutrition as we normally would, then segueing into environmental issues, and then to our guest, then to commentary. Instead, we're going to reverse that order. We're going to be beginning our program with the concept of moving towards the future with a real progressive movement and the need for a new renaissance among true intellectuals. Whether they're from a conservative or liberal background is irrelevant. We are a country that is imbued with dynamic minds, and we need to have a call for compassionate intellect. My guest in this segment will be Chris Hedges. Now, many people know that Chris is one of our nation's most insightful cultural critics and authors. For almost 20 years, he was a foreign correspondent in war zones and conflicts in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans. He reported for the New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, and other outlets. While at the Times, Chris received the Pulitzer Prize for reporting on global terrorism. The same year, he received Amnesty International's Global Award for Human Rights Journalism. Chris's most recent book, co-written and with the renowned cartoonist and author Joe Sacco, is Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. It's a very compelling, hard look at the most impoverished regions in the United States that have become sacrifice zones to benefit the powerful and wealthy. We'll go to Chris in just a moment. Later in the program, under our environmental segment, I'll be sharing some of the latest insights, including, are we headed back to the Great Dust Bowl of the 30s? If we are, blame the banks. Also, the newest study just out today predicts a 6-degree centigrade rise in temperature. What will that do? Well, right now we're at 1, so just imagine how severe the weather's going to be at 6. Then from Common Dreams, sizzling heat, storms, wildfires, this is just the beginning. I'm asking people not to rebuild their homes. Yes, we need to find homes for these people and food and water, and we have to help them, but rebuilding would be the worst thing we could do for a simple reason. Next season, we should be realistically expecting Category 2 or Category 3 hurricanes. Last year, it was a tropical storm. Look at the damage, still not repaired in upstate New York and in Vermont. And in many of the people, if, for example, in Deal, I have friends who live in Deal, and almost all the basements were flooded, and much of the first floor was flooded. One homemaker over there told me that it was costing her family over $50,000 to decontaminate. They had to take out the flooring. They had to redo the whole basement. And on top of that, they found out they had radon gas and get rid of the mold. Their kids couldn't stay there because of the mold. They never thought it would happen. Ironic, because just 1 week before that hurricane was announced, which actually was a tropical storm when it hit, I was asked to lecture in Deal by a friend to a large group of women. It was a women's club, and I'm going to guess there are about 150 women there. And I was talking about health and nutrition, and then I just said, let me share a few moments. Are you ready if in case we have any storms, solar storms, earthquakes, hurricanes, and people got up and walked away. They started talking on their cell phones. They weren't interested. So I went ahead and I limited it to about 5 minutes. I say, at least get yourself propane generators, but don't put them in the basement because you're at a level here. If there's a small surge, your basements are flooded. And one of them shot out to me, yeah, well, we've lived here 80 years. We've never had that happen. So it's not going to happen. And fine. But I said, have racks off the ground where you can have stored dried food, have a water filtration system, have a generator that's 5 feet off the ground that works off propane, not gasoline, and not diesel. Because propane lasts a lot longer, you can get a 500,000-gallon tank. I have 3,000-gallon tanks. If I run out of power and my house is 100% solar, backed up by 9 months' worth of propane, backed up by water distillation, water filters, portable, and backed up by food for at least 2 years. Now, it might have cost me a little bit, but food I don't use at the end of the year, I always give to a local church. In fact, there are two churches every year I give to, so that the people who need food in their congregation who are suffering now have it, so nothing goes to waste. I'm never angry at myself at the end of the year, saying, daggone it, I wasted that money on my fire insurance, my hurricane insurance, my health insurance. I'm never angry if I don't have to use that. I'm happy if I don't. But a lot of people, and particularly that day, were completely not just indifferent, they were actually angry. And one woman said to me this. She stood up, and she was right in the front row. She says, we came here to hear you talk about health, not this other crap. And I saw their heads nodding in agreement. I said, fine, I'll go back to talking about health. Mind you, I was doing this free as a gift to a friend. I will never go back to that community, by the way, and deal. No way. The rudeness, the lack of humanistic value, all religion, by the way, it was a specific religious group. Where is the spirituality in that? Well, that's lacking. But in any case, I felt sorry for them. I'm being driven back to the town. My friend said, I'm sorry that they were so rude and discourteous. I said, look, it's what it is. 1 week later, I get this text. You were right. All those people, they're all flooded out. Had nothing to do with me. Had to do with the fact that nobody wanted to see it coming because we don't like to go into discomfort. We don't like to know that a president of the United States tells us one thing and does the next. We don't like it if the media has to acknowledge their bias. Instead, we believe they're not biased. When Fox says, you know, fair and balanced, there's nothing fair or balanced in their reporting. There's nothing progressive in most of the liberal radio and television and media. You think you're getting the truth? And so where are we at now? We're not even honest enough to say that a storm last year, tropical storm, becomes a Category 1 and displaces 3.5 million people, hundreds of thousands homeless, FEMA completely gone. They should have had emergency port-a-sands, emergency gas and fuel trucks at all the central places likely to go out, emergency portable housing, emergency shelters in place, also to have emergency water. None of that did they have. Not a single thing did they have. So people, compassionate people, were responsible for helping a lot of the people in the dark. In fact, I want to thank the three Haitian cab drivers. One who I've seen at lectures, and he dropped by because I decided to go up and help and open up during the storm at 85 miles an hour. We were open and helping people. He said, what's the water? I said, I'm stacking water aside to take to people because they're going to be out of water. He said, I'll take it down. And so he took it down. He kept making trips back and forth, knowing full well that he didn't have a lot of gasoline, knowing full well that he might not be able to get home himself. And I said, if you can, I'll put a cot up for you. But then he called two other Haitian cab drivers, and they just kept ferrying food and water all night long. So I thank them for showing their spiritual values, their ethics, their connection to a community that was not being served correctly by the city. But on the other hand, I have to ask, are we ready to accept the truth that we are living in non-sustainable environments? 16 states are in permanent drought. That's not going to change. We have 56 million Americans living in harm's way. That's not going to change. We have water warming from global warming. 28% of that is due to how we agricultural practices, and that's not going to change. So if none of the causes of our problems are going to change, and the only solution we have is self-sufficiency and awareness, then why would you rebuild knowing that next year a Category 2 or 3 is going to come and therefore have 10 times the destruction that we just saw? How many times do we have to have this happen before we finally wake up and say, Enough. I must look for the truth. That's my introduction to my guest, in a larger context. And by the way, last night, Professor James Petras, the Bartle Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Binghamton University in New York, and an expert on America's interference in global politics, especially Latin America and the Middle East, and a Bertrand Russell Tribunal panelist, was on to talk about the Hurricane Sandy and the failure of FEMA. And yet FEMA's being praised. Not by us, he's not. Let's say hello to Chris Hedges. Nice to have you with us today, Chris.
Thank you, Gary.
Chris, please take us through your understanding of why those of us will vote for a third-party candidate today, or why the Democrats and Republicans will not. And the argument that we hear constantly, even yesterday on the radio, which is fine, we respect all opinions, having a forum where, well, it might be the lesser of two evils, but anything is better than Romney. So I'm going to vote for Obama. And then I just reminded the person, here's what you're voting for. Here's what he did. Now, do you think by voting for him, any of that will change, or will it just get more of the National Defense Authorization Act and Patriot policies and surveillance on Americans, etc.? And his concern was just, well, we don't want another member of the Supreme Court being conservative. And I said, there's a whole lot more going wrong in America, in the world, than what the Supreme Court has to deal with. Your thoughts on these, take your time. The forum is yours.
Well, on all of the major structural issues, there is no difference. And because of that, we are, as you said at the top of the show, facing such catastrophic assaults on the ecosystem that within a few decades or less, the survival of the human species is at stake. The financiers on Wall Street under Obama have once again, of course, after looting the U.S. Treasury, engaged in the speculative crimes that created the first global meltdown and is now destined inevitably to create a second, because there is no regulation, there is no check. The expansion of imperial wars, the assault on civil liberties, which, of course, has been worse under Barack Obama than under his predecessor, George W. Bush, all of this remains unchanged. And I think we get caught up in the personal narratives of the candidates, distracted by those personal narratives, without understanding that the engine of corporate power remains untouched, no matter who's in the office. The personal narratives of a George Bush and the personal narrative of a Barack Obama are very different. They're very different figures. And yet there's utter continuity on all of the issues that count. Now, people will pick up tangential social issues, issues I support, whether that's gay marriage, whether that's a woman's right to choose. But, you know, I wish that we had the luxury of saying that those issues were the most important facing us. Unfortunately, you know, we can't talk about a woman's right to choose when tens and hundreds of millions of people begin to die in droughts and famine. We are on track now to thrust the planet upwards by 6 degrees Celsius. We are already, even if we stopped all carbon emissions today, going to raise the planet by 1 or 2 degrees. We saw what happened in New York, and you're right, that's just a taste. I mean, this is the new normal, although you wouldn't know that from the corporate media, or the political candidates who, you know, even in the face of Hurricane Sandy, refused to talk about the most pressing issue facing us, and that's, of course, the degradation of the ecosystem. I mean, we watched this summer 40% of the summer Arctic sea ice melt, and the response of corporate power is to go up with huge tankers and ships and mine the last vestiges of fish and oil and natural gas. It's insane. It's as if, you know, it makes Herman Melville's Moby Dick the most prescient study of the American character, because we're all in the Pequod. Ahab's in charge, and as Ahab said, my means and my methods are sane, only my object is mad. And there is nothing now within the formal mechanisms of power with either party that's going to put a stop to us. In the name of greed and short-term profit, these people are going to plunge us over the cliff. And we don't have any time left. So when we begin to talk about the lesser of two evils, I share many people's distaste for Romney, of course. Just as I found George W. Bush a more distasteful political figure than Obama. And yet, you know, once you turn away from the $2.5 billion in propaganda that these two parties have put out, the fact is, on all of the issues that count, corporate power it determines our relationship to the global economy. It determines our relationship to the ecosystem. It determines our relationship to the expansion of imperial power. And these people know what's coming, and they're preparing for it. And that's why they are pushing through. And under Obama, he has been far more egregious than Bush, as I said before, pushing through measures that, in essence, criminalize all forms of dissent. As many of your listeners know, when Obama signed into law the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1021, which permits the U.S. military to carry out domestic policing on American soil, to seize American citizens, hold them without due process, in indefinite detention, including in our offshore penal colonies. I sued the president, was later joined by others, including Noam Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg. We won in federal court, in the Southern District Court in New York in September. Judge Catherine Forrest issued a permanent injunction. And the reaction of the Obama administration, and by the way, in her 112-page opinion, which is really worth reading, she brings up the specter of the 110,000 Japanese Americans who were detained in internment camps and again stripped of due process, as essentially creating this law, Section 1021, creating that kind of a precedent. What was the response of the Obama administration? They demanded an emergency stay, which means put the law back in force until they can appeal it. They can get a decision in the appellate court. Judge Forrest refused. That was Friday afternoon, late Friday night. They went to the appellate court and demanded an emergency hearing for a stay the next Monday at 9 a.m., which they got. Now, we were surprised. The lawyers, Carl Mayer and Bruce Afron and myself, were surprised. We knew they'd appeal, but at how aggressive they were. And that can really only mean one thing, and that is that they're already using the law. Probably my guess is on, you know, U.S. dual U.S. Pakistani nationals held in places like Bagram, because if the injunction was allowed to stand and they were holding U.S. Citizens in military facilities without access to due process, they would be in contempt of court. The appellate court unfortunately granted the Obama administration the stay. And now we should hear by the first week of January the decision by the appellate court on the appeal. You know, it's far more important to look at what these people do rather than what they say. The systems of propaganda in this system, in this country, have become so sophisticated. They're very good at, and that's why they're constantly taking our polls, constantly doing focus groups. They know what we want to hear. They know how to make us confuse how we are made to feel with knowledge. That's what skillful public relations does. We are a society utterly awash in lies. And the inability to step back, to break free from these electronic hallucinations and understand what's happening to us, the engines of corporate power, makes it very difficult for us to resist. And I will be voting for Jill Stein this afternoon, not because Jill Stein's going to win. It's the same reason I voted, and you did too, Gary, for Ralph Nader in 2008, 2004, and 2002, is because We have to begin to register in every way possible our protest and our defiance. And of course, going in and voting is actually a very minor act. I think it's creating movements, engaging in acts of civil disobedience, which I do frequently and did with many of the Occupy Wall Street people down in Zuccotti. That's our only hope left. I think that in many ways, agreeing to participate in this political charade, in this political theater, is legitimating a system that no longer, in my mind, has any democratic legitimacy at all.
I appreciate those insights. I just have two more areas to, if you would address, please. Now, one may seem a little absurd, but I'd like the people in this audience to at least consider this. When it came to rallying the liberal base or the conservative base to support things like closing down Indian Point nuclear facilities and all around the country and to stop gas hydrofracking and to really support an understanding of what green technology is versus labeling nuclear green when it's not, labeling clean coal green when it is not, and then going after a Wall Street by holding demonstrations at specific locations and then in Washington the same way, as you remember we did at Bank America that day,
right,
Chris, and we were there, and 1,200 people in this audience were there. I have been told repeatedly, including people associated with The Nation magazine, with this radio station, with others, well, you know, we realize it isn't ideal, but if you go too far out on that limb of being critical of this president, all doors will close to you, and all the top Democratic donors and all the top Democratic activists, they know that there is a line that you do not cross in being critical of this administration or anything it's doing, or you are persona non grata, and then they give some examples. So I have a lot of respect for what The Nation magazine has done historically and on many issues. It has been a beacon. On this issue, however, I feel that it has taken the wrong position. It had all endorsements for Obama, didn't even give an opportunity for the third-party candidates to show individually, but more importantly, Chris, here's my second point, collectively. Yes, we're going to lose this, the third party, but what if after this we get all the good third-party people, bring back in Kucinich and Ralph Nader and all the other people, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, there are at least 20 of them, and create a more of a people's movement for the next round. At least we will have platforms. We will have articulated positions. We will have differentiated what we are. Also, and my last point is this, we have had virtually no anti-war movement on a democratic level. We have no major movement to stand up against the invasion of our constitutional liberties and taking away habeas corpus, etc., under this administration, because the Democrats, who historically would have been the first out there to oppose these things, including the largest immigration movement in American history, we had under when Bush was in office, we have not had that now. In fact, this president has arrested and jailed and deported more illegal aliens, 1.5 million, than any other administration in history. So I believe that if Romney, and this is what may sound quirky, if Romney is elected, I believe that we could have three things happen. One, that those on the left who were swallowing the bitter pill will now no longer have any ideology to defend, and therefore their real concern will come forward, so we could see the rebirth of a new intellectual culture in the United States instead of the current anti-intellectualism. I believe that Americans are acting much like those in Rome did in the waning years, where it was all anti-intellectualism. I believe that we will also see people, American, great American intellects and scholars like Morris Berman, for example, and who from his first book of his American trilogy, The Twilight of American Culture, where he speaks of the need for preservation of critical thought and deep intelligentsia with a spiritual frame. That's exactly what you and others have been doing for a time, but you've been excluded because the core democratic principles, the core liberal principles, had to exclude this, or they would have alienated themselves from being a part of this Obama configuration. So I see that we'll have a new anti-war movement, a new peace movement, a new effort to regain our constitutional powers, but not if Obama's reelected. Would you address these, please?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, the argument is made, and it is correct, that Obama makes things worse because he disempowers elements who give him the benefit of the doubt, who under a Republican administration would be out in the street. I mean, it's not unique to Obama. The anti-war movement committed collective suicide in 2004 when it decided to call off its demonstrations to support John Kerry, who then went around and tried to out Bush in terms of, you know, reporting for duty, and he wouldn't have withdrawn from Fallujah, and on and on and on. And I think that, you know, we've forgotten how power works. It works by creating movements that pressure the center, that hold fast to these issues. It's not our job, those of us who care about democratic equality and justice, to take power. I think we fail to understand that throughout American history, it is primarily not only through movements but third parties that have always operated outside the mainstream that we've built the kind of social justice issue and challenged disenfranchisement. You know, whether it was the Liberty Party that fought slavery, whether it was the Prohibition and socialist parties who joined with the suffragists to fight for women's right to vote in the 19th Amendment, whether it was the Socialist Party and the radical labor unions that organized to abolish child labor and make the 40-hour work week possible, whether it was the Populist Party, which gave us the Immigration Act of 1924, along with a progressive tax system. You know, all of these movements have largely been erased from history books, including the role of the Communist Party in the early part of the 19th century, very important role. And you know, it's sort of the great white man theory of history. The fact is, Roosevelt was pressured into giving us the Social Security Act of 1935 because there were powerful socialist movements within this country, and without those movements, that kind of legislation is never possible. And we have to recapture that kind of power. We have to rebuild, as you said, those kind of movements. And so many movements, including MoveOn.org, have just been taken hostage by the Democratic Party establishment for all of the reasons you said. You know, they would meet every week in Washington during the health care debate, for instance, with MoveOn officials, and they would bring along their donors, the Democratic establishment. And they knew very well that their funding would dry up if they didn't chant the Democratic line. So MoveOn, for instance, became a very obstructive force in the whole issue to save the public option, which we now know Obama cynically sold us out on, you know, before the whole debate began. So, yeah, it's and look, I mean, we don't have any time left. I mean, you know, to be quite honest, reading climate change reports, it may already be too late. But to somehow remain passive under an administration that shredded Kyoto, to somehow remain passive under a president that now drills, you know, in off the Florida coast, off the East Coast, off Alaska. I mean, all the drilling sites that Sarah Palin, you know, wanted exploited when she was running with McCain. She got them. She got them all under Obama. But the civil liberties issue for me is quite terrifying because, you know, if you give central authority this kind of control, they'll use it. And we are just, you know, we are going to be so cornered even before we begin. Of course, we're already the most monitored, wiretapped, observed, photographed population in human history. I mean, dwarfing even the Stasi state, which I covered. I covered the fall of East Germany. And that was the FISA Amendment Act, supported by Obama. Warrantless wiretapping, eavesdropping, and monitoring of tens of millions of American citizens. And all of our information are stored out in supercomputers in Utah. So, You know, this, you gotta hand it to the public relations industry. On the one hand, they're truly evil. On the other hand, they're very effective. And they have mesmerized, you know, whole segments of the society, including the liberal intelligentsia, who should know better, into, in essence, supporting a system that, you know, means their own enslavement.
Chris, I appreciate what you have to say today. My takeaway message from what you're saying is that we must join together to revive an appreciation for intellectual inquiry, not just in enlightened thinking, but also arts, history, humanities, to give a moral and ethical framework, to restore the better qualities of Western culture that so many hundreds of thousands of great thinkers in our society and elsewhere have been holding back because they haven't had a cooperative form to work with. And now after this election, I believe it's time for us all to work together, leave the egos at the door, and work for the common good of all people. And you're certainly one of the major architects. And always a gift to have you on, and we thank you. And this is always a forum for you to use when you need to.
Thank you, Gary.
Chris Hedges, my guest. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. We're heard in 140 countries and all over Canada. And so it's always nice to know that people are sharing insights and information by mouth, because that way that whole massive movement of people talking with people makes a difference. In this segment of our program, I'm going to open it up immediately for TalkBack, the segment of our program where you have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. Then I'm going to give you a short commentary from Professor James Petras, and he is one of the most renowned thinkers in the world. And he has a short piece that I will quote from called U.S. Elections from the Lesser to the Greater Evil, The Demise of Critical Liberalism. And it's just a page long. And then from Stephen Ledman, one of my favorite thinkers, America's Deplorable Human Rights Record. So if we're going to call ourselves remarkable and exceptional, do we take any credit for how remarkable and exceptional our destruction and death and suffering to others has been? So that's coming at you, plus our environmental update. Because of the election today, we will not have our regular lineup of how we normally do. We just had to shift it because Chris had to be available early to leave. Now, just three program announcements very quickly. Yesterday, a gentleman called in who could not make it to my past Saturday's lecture on surviving and creating a sustainable quality of life in the future. I'm not talking about, you know, being one of those goofballs that gets a, you know, nuclear bunker somewhere out, a missile bunker out in the West and hunkers down. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about three separate plans, A, B, and C. If you're older, younger, family, single, money, car, no car, what do you do if there's a crisis to where you choose to put yourself out of harm's way? Or if it's a crisis so bad you have no choice but to get out of harm's way, like a nuclear meltdown or solar storm? They are coming, and they're only about 4 weeks away, maximum 4 weeks. How bad they are is what we don't know. I'm planning for an X15 or higher. That means end of life as we know it for this part of the country, because no one in the government, nor in the White House, nor in the nuclear agencies or in the utility agency has chosen to put the $1 billion necessary to put the surge protectors in all of our major power stations to keep the grid on. And if you think this storm was bad, you have no idea how bad a solar storm will be, 1,000 times worse. Because you won't have anyone going out and hooking up a line and getting electricity back, because there's no lines to hook up. They're burnt out. They have to be replaced. The whole 100-ton grid has to be replaced. The only place you can get those? China. A 3-year waiting list. And there's no determination that they're going to have more than 1 week to 1 month of backup fuel with the nuclear power plant 28 miles north of New York. Within 5 hours, 20 million people who can hear my voice right now in this vicinity could be getting their toxic dose of radiation if it goes down. No emergency plans, no evacuation plans, nothing. You would simply die. And then what you going to do? What you going to do? So I'm going to, I said I would do Saturday, this coming Saturday. I'm going to be in Washington Sunday, by the way. We're going to have a packed house at a major theater right a half hour from downtown Washington for our PFW audience, a movie, a lecture, two lectures I'm doing. One on the cure for all things, and the other one's on survival, then health support groups. It's going to be a long day. I'm going in and out the same day, so it's going to be a full day. But Saturday, that gentleman's lecture is full. Then we push it off to 2 o'clock. That's full. And so we're going to do 4 o'clock, and that's it. And that number to call is 646-926-5422 for the surviving lecture. That'll be on the Upper West Side at our office. Separately, because of people not being able to get in, they didn't have the fuel or the transportation, this past weekend, I've extended to this Saturday and Sunday from 9 in the morning till 9 at night. If you choose, and as a public service to help you, I'm giving at my cost bulk items that don't go bad so that you can get them in bulk and non-perishables. And then you'll have 1 week to pick them up after they arrive. And I don't have room in the basement to store this stuff. So the moment they come in, you'll get a call. You got to come pick it up. But I just got a list of stuff. Like there'll be some canned goods, like black soybeans and black beans, lima beans and butter beans and garbanzo and Great Northern and Navy and Pinto. And then there'll be chili, vegan chili, and all kinds of bean dips. These are in cans and refried beans that don't go bad. Then there's the bulk items, everything from red quinoa and steel-cut oats and millet and couscous and kamut and brown rice of all types and beans of every type, all dry, 25-pound bags. And so it's a big savings because I'm giving you my price. Again, this is purely a public service to those who want to be prepared and have food in bulk. So if you need it where you're at or if you need to drive and take it someplace, you will have it. You wouldn't have to be rushing out and trying to find it, and you see what the results of that are now. So for that, there is no phone to call. You can't call. You got to show up in person Saturday or Sunday, 9 to 9, 89th and Broadway. It's on the corner, 89th and Broadway. So that's that. Now, also, we just got in this morning, and I'm really appreciative of this. And this is because of calling the people out in Wisconsin saying, can you please send us some of the water filters? We got 16 water filters in today in our office. These are not to be shipped. It's just a first-come basis. People show up. They're here, finally, the 3-gallon portable ones. Now, to a short commentary and then your calls. I'm quoting from Professor James Petras, P-E-T-R-A-S. He is a remarkable person. He was on the show last night. You can go to the archives and download last night's show on this station and listen to it. It was part of our the Progressive Commentary Hour on Hurricane Sandy and the debacle of FEMA. Quote, there is ample evidence that the Obama presidency has pulled the U.S. political spectrum further to the right. On most domestic and foreign issues, Obama has embraced extremist positions, surpassing his Republican predecessor, and in the process devastating what remained of the peace and social movements of the past decade. Moreover, the Obama presidency has laid the groundwork for the immediate future, promising a further extension of regressive policies following the presidential elections, such as cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Incumbents and their opposition compete over hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign funding from wealthy donors, which they will have to repay in the post-election period in billion-dollar handouts, subsidies, tax abatements, and anti-labor and anti-environmental policies. Not a single positive proposal was put forth by the Obama campaign, but numerous militarist and regressive social policies were articulated. The Obama campaign ran a fear campaign, playing off the reactionary proposals of the Romney Tea Party alliance. A cover for his own record of unprecedented military spending, sequential wars, immigrant expulsions, mortgage foreclosures, and Wall Street bailouts. In the process, critical liberals have crossed the line, surrendering their integrity by deflecting attention from Obama's actual militaristic, socially regressive policies to focus on opposing Romney as a greater evil. Progressives and critical liberals have multiplied and magnified the duplicity of the Obama political apparatus. In the name of opposing the current greater evil, Romney, they dare not enumerate and specify the wanton political crimes and monumental socioeconomic injustices perpetrated by their lesser evil candidate, Obama. Will the progressives ever play honest and publicly state, we back Obama in swing states because he has only murdered 10,000 Afghans, 5,000 Iraqis, is starving 75 million Iranians via sanctions, gives $3 billion for Israel displacement of millions of Palestinians, personally oversees the arbitrary execution of U.S. citizens, and promises an extended kill list because Romney promised to be worse? Think of that. Expecting honesty from the proponents of lesser evils is a far-fetched concept. Political damage incurred by the social movements and U.S. working class under Obama presidency is unprecedented and has laid the groundwork for further social regression and greater imperial bellicosity. The Obama presidency and the run-up to his past and present electoral campaigns have had a devastating impact on popular social movements engaged in issues of peace, labor, immigrant, and constitutional rights and environmental regulation. In conclusion, the peace movement virtually disappeared, and its leaders urged its supporters to turn their activities into supporting Obama's election. He rewarded them by escalating military spending, engaging in sequential wars, and directly or by proxy in seven countries wreaked havoc and destruction. He faced minimal opposition as ex-peace activists in dismay turned away or grabbed a post and apologized for war. By 2012, the follower-less peace leaders repeat the same mantra to support Obama, but dare not repeat the past lie. The immigrant rights movement prior to 2008 election of Obama mobilized several million, till it was infiltrated and taken over by the Mexican-American political hacks from the Democratic Party and turned into an electoral machine to secure elected posts for themselves and Obama. He rewarded the immigrants by setting a record, seizing, jailing, and expelling 1.5 million immigrants over his tenure. The immigrant rights mass movement has been largely dismantled, and now Democratic political hustlers hire canvassers to round up and register highly disillusioned immigrant voters. African Americans were the most neglected sector of the U.S. working class under Obama. They experienced the highest levels of unemployment, of home foreclosures, and the longest periods of joblessness. They became politically invisible as Obama bent over front ways to appease rabid white racists seeking to label him a black president. The established black leadership, political and religious, and the media celebrities all went out to block any expression of grassroots opposition, claiming it would only, quote, help the racists, ignoring Obama's embrace and bailout of white Wall Street and showing his backside to millions of black households underwater, without movement or leadership, fearful of the problem, economic racism, and the solution, 4 more years of invisibility under Obama, most black workers are left to abstain or hold their nose and vote for Obama. The Occupy Wall Street movement, precisely because it was independent of the Democratic Party and fed up with Obama's total subservience to Wall Street, provided a temporary voice for the vast majority of Americans opposed to both political parties. The local and state Democratic officials applauded the cause, then immediately repressed the movement. A spontaneous movement without political direction and lacking an alternative political leadership was incapable of confronting the Obama regime. The movement declined and disintegrated. Many sympathizers sucked up by the Obama lesser evil propaganda campaigns. The mass popular animus to Wall Street was diffused by Obama's claim he had saved, quote, the economy from catastrophe by channeling $20 trillion into the bankers' pockets, but not a penny into anyone whose home was being foreclosed. Constitutional rights were savaged by Obama's defensive military trials, Bush-era tortures, expansion of arbitration, executive power, including the assumption of presidential power to assassinate any U.S. citizen without any trial. While legal organizations fought the good fight for civil liberties, the vast majority of liberals were notable by their absence from any sustained democratic movements upholding the rights of 40 million Americans under currently police surveillance, especially Muslim citizens and immigrants, and all those who complain or challenge or protest anything. They chose not to embrace their democratic present. They placed their reelection of a police state Democrat over and above their putative defense of constitutional rights. No mass marches for civil liberties. No protests against Homeland Security. No campus-wide free speech movements against the abrogation of the right to criticize Israel. For decades, the trade union, confederations, and senior citizens' movements defended Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, with Obama in office openly declaring and preparing major reductions and regressive clauses on coverage, raising age qualification, and indexing. There's no significant protest movement. Programs which, for the better part of a century, like Social Security or a half century, Medicare and Medicaid, were considered untouchable, are now, according to Obama, quote, on the table to be gutted, to be reformed, to be adjusted. The trade union millionaire bosses hire a small army of campaign workers and raise over $150 million to reelect a president who promises to make huge cuts in medical programs for pensioners and the poor. Obama has legitimated the regressive social positions of the far right, while the Democratic Party neutralized by any trade union opposition or mobilization. Last but not least, the Obama regime has co-opted progressive liberal social critics via backdoor support. In the name of opposing Romney, the progressive pundits like Noam Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg end up in alliance with Wall Street and Silicon Valley. End quote. Your thoughts. I'm Gary Nall, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We'll take your calls now. Let's say hello to Ron from New York. Hi, Ron, you're on.
The thing I understand, you're an intellectual thinker. You have intellectual thinkers come on. The design of this country from the beginning of the times of the founding fathers, when Columbus landed on here, this is the design, to keep certain people down so other people can get wealthy. By putting Mitt Romney in there and saying that that's going to turn the tables around, I really doubt it, because he will initiate, and he has no fear of saying his feelings, and he has no fear of lying and then turning it around. You've got to continue with the situation like it is right now until we can force. We have to, as individual people in this government, the citizens, we have to force certain things to happen. By replacing one evil with another evil, if that's your ideology, it's not going to consume a change that we need right now.
Okay, but Ron, I'm suggesting not to support either of these lesser evils. I'm suggesting that you will never see any change. You have seen no change in any movement. You've seen the destruction of the one movement. You've seen the infiltration. You've seen the agent provocateurs in the Wall Street movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement. And who exactly, Ron, let's be clear on this. Was it Mitt Romney who had national surveillance and Homeland Security photographing every person in the Occupy movement, getting retinal scans done so they could identify them? Who exactly was it, Mitt Romney? Who said that every one of 40 million Americans who protest, including those who do animal protests, those who actually find abuses against animals and bring it to our attention, should now be called terrorists and the FBI should put them on a terror list? Who was that, Ron? Who exactly, Ron, caused the drones to kill innocent civilians, 20 civilians for every one of the terrorists? Who was it who gave $20 trillion, the largest amount of money in history that would have fixed all of our infrastructure, de-ghettoized America? Who was it who didn't allow the minimum wage to be increased? Who was it who said, if you protest against this or any corporate policy, you are now a terrorist because you're now an agent provocateur? So if you're trying to tell me that by having Obama stay in office, as you're suggesting, that we then can work for change within that administration, I'd like to know how that's possible. But I'm suggesting get the people who do not do these things. Get the third-party people. Get the people who are not merely intellectual but are humanistic and compassionate and true people of moral value, who would get rid of the Homeland Security Act, get rid of the Patriot Act, get rid of the National Defense, get rid of the Federal Reserve, get rid of the 18 major agencies, get us out of 980 bases around the world, reestablish proper diplomatic and humanistic and cultural ties with the nations we have been at war with so you have some form of lasting peace, to close down detention, to close down the secret sites, to stop enhanced interrogation torture that are done in other, in Bagram and other places, and to no longer give banks the money, to no longer give Wall Street the money, to no longer give the power to the insurance companies, the hospital association, the drug companies, the oil cartel, the gas cartel, to promote hydrofracking, to despoil our environment. That's your man. Now, if you're telling me that I should accept every possible human right violation, every possible injustice, that somehow he just needs four more years to perfect his style, I'm going to say, why not Jill Stein? Why not Rocky Anderson? Why not Kerry Johnson? Why not some of the people who have shown that they wouldn't have done any of this, have never done any of this, have no record of doing this, and would dismantle the existing system? It is supporting people who could dismantle the system, who have a political base, who may only have 3% today or 15%, but in the next election cycle could have a majority and offer an absolute challenge to the existing power base. That's what we're suggesting. I appreciate your call and your thoughts, Ron. Thank you for calling in. And let's say hello to Connie from Chelsea. Hi, Connie. Your turn.
Hi. I'm about to go down, and I actually don't know, and I won't know until I'm in the booth if I'm going to do Jill Stein or Obama. But what I do want to do is hook up with this movement afterwards. I want to make sure, because my ex-old man said the time for a third party is after this election.
That's correct.
That's when we all have to work.
Well, let me tell you what we're doing. A, we have more progressive voices coming together each day, reading articles only from progressive meaning. What do I mean? I'm meaning not left, not right, not ideology bound. These people are looking for the truth in a story, and the stories that make us a better person and provide us with solutions to our problems. They're from all walks of life. We do about 200 to 300 of those a day. We have documentaries on progressive issues from progressive people like Danny Schechter and Helen Caldicott and Michio Kaku and Jim Hightower. We and all the others. We have the largest group of progressive voices each day over the internet that you can hear anywhere in the world. Now, we've been doing this for 8 years. I've been planning for 8 years to get a forum where people leave the ego at the door, no more ideologies, in fact, no more Green Party, no more Libertarian Party, no more a Justice Party, just a People's Party, just people working together for the common good of us and against the interests of the corporate elite and the oligarchs. What is so hard for people to understand? The people in power got in power and stayed in power because they serve the people who have power. We, the people, have no one in power because we have not organized ourselves. We are now doing that. I can't tell you how many times we have talked with Rocky Anderson, Dennis Kucinich, Jesse Ventura, and Jill Stein, all these people, and said, after this election, put your best effort in. We're there to support you, but then let's all work together for common good. And they said yes. So the Progressive Radio Network is where it's happening, will happen, and that's why we have more people. We have 6,000 brand new people every day coming on board. So it's not a secret. Just tune in and vote your conscience when you go today. I won't tell you more than that. I'm looking at the clock. And we're up to the end of this particular program, but I'm going to extend a little more because our lines are blowing out here. We have every line lit. Let's say hello to Judy from New York. Hi, Judy, your turn.
You're one of my favorites. I just wanted to mention, I have a bit of a question, and perhaps it might not be a popular thing to say. I hear your comments about Obama, and I hear your comments about Romney, obviously with this administration. The proof is evident about what he did and what he failed to do. Without making any excuses, I've also heard you mention certain organizations that are at the top that sort of control things. Is it a far-fetched thinking to wonder, he is the president, but is it possible that there are things that perhaps he cannot do?
Okay, Judy, let me answer that. Good question. Very insightful. Here is my thought. In America, you are never elected. Never elected. until you are selected. And who selects you? Who grooms you? Who supports you? Who surrounds you? The Council on Foreign Relations? No. The Trilateral Commission? No. You join those later. It's the Bilderbergs. Obama and Hillary Clinton both met with the Bilderbergs in a hotel in Virginia while they were both running. Why? Why was there no mention by the media? Why were they never questioned on this? These are the most powerful interests in the world. They're behind the scenes. You will go against them, you will not maintain your power, or you'll never get power. If you agree to their agendas, to their ways of looking at the world, then if you are selected, then you will be elected. They control everything. So at a certain point, a person looks and sees what do they give up of their integrity, of their promises, of their morality, of their common sense, of their decency, of their honor, in order to be rewarded. And power is the ultimate corrupting agent. Power eviscerates, destroys, and completely spits out a person's spiritual values. So you come from the dark side of your conditioned self, and therefore you see the rewards. Never again in your life will you be anything but applauded. You won't ever have to wait. You have always a full schedule, always lauding you, always having this cult of worship, never concerned about another meal to be made. That's a reward. Give you one example. Bill Clinton, in my opinion, one of the worst presidents in world history, if not the worst, because he sold out everybody. And if you doubt me, challenge me. Let me show you the 64-page report I did on everything he did wrong that no one was willing to look at. But look at what he did. Within 2 years of being out of office, he was the wealthiest president in American history. In fact, he made so much money out of office that he made more than all the other presidents combined. He's now worth hundreds of millions of dollars, his foundation, worth hundreds, if not billion dollars. And who gave him that money? Who would pay someone $500,000 to a half-hour talk? The people that he gave the right laws, the right rules, and he made. The rule is that for every dollar you give in a campaign, you get $100 in return in favors. So if he's gotten $100 million, imagine the billions that he's allowed other people to make. And let's try NAFTA, GATT, the World Trade Organization, and there you're at several trillion dollars in favors they got. So that's what happens when a person knows who is supporting them. And you are right, Judy. There is a limit to what any person who wants to do the right thing can do if what they are about to do would in any way adversely interfere with the agenda of those who consider themselves the most powerful forces on earth. Thank you for your call. For all the rest, I'm sorry I couldn't take your call today. I will get to it. If you have not voted, vote your conscience and common sense. And hopefully you'll make the right decision. Either way, we will be back here tomorrow broadcasting to the progressive minds. And I thank you all. WBAI is sharing our studio, and we are happy to share that with them. Noble and courageous, trying to do the right thing. BAI has been around a long time, and in their hour of need, it is good to see so many people come together to see that they stay on the air. And hopefully in the next few days, they'll be back on Wall Street so they can do uninterrupted programming. And starting tomorrow, they'll be broadcasting, I believe, from 6 in the morning live till midnight, so at least a half day of live programming. Have a nice day, everyone.
That he'd love you much more.